Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm actually like hyperly vigilant of everyone everywhere. I'm always, I think when you're kind of doing it, because it's like,
do you feel responsible for everybody?
Yeah, but yeah, you feel like you're always aware of like what's going on, what's time, you're just aware.
And
like
you're higher brain, up.
Yeah, in a sense. I'm
you are higher up. You're than, physically higher up than the rest
yeah,
of us.
Yeah, I think there's different ways of doing it. When you, like, I wonder how you do it when you present. Like, do you drop in or do you sit above? I generally like watch myself conducting it, thinking, where is it going? What's going on here? What's the time? Is it safe? Is it whatever's going on? That's how I run it.
I don't do that. I let you do that totally.
But when you're doing,
I sit in a counselling room with the door shut. I mean, that's my bread and butter life, right?
Yeah.
I have to remove all.
But for example, when you're doing the podcast,
I wouldn't do this.
Elizabeth.
I wouldn't stomp. I wouldn't go out. I would sit in a studio.
Yeah, but even in the studio, do you like?
I lock the door.
Right. Okay. Know. Fine. But you're in. You're basically in the moment.
In the moment, that thing. Because I have to be in it. I can't do the in out.
Yeah. It's interesting. It is. I mean, I do. Obviously, I'm really like intensely like thinking and listening. But I just watch a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So part of it.
You're a hustler.
Yeah, we're all different.
I'm a hustler.
Yeah, I guess it's. Well, I am a hustler as well because I guess I have. I do like got thing to thing to go from. The brain goes like to this part and into that part. That's just how it is.
I know. Okay. But it rocks each bit of it. That's what I find interesting. It's like. You're not quick enough to drop the bits. It's like you just end up with all of the bits.
Carrying. It's the suitcase analogy of filling the suitcase up and you're dragging that along.
Yeah.
I can definitely feel that. But I think also I don't know how I would be any different because actually I face so many different challenges in each of my pots.
Yeah.
I could write a book about each of my challenges that in each aspect of my life that could be like, if I was not how I was, I don't think I could have got through.
Yeah, but you've just nailed that because you've just described an ambivalent attachment style. You've just described what it is. I could write a book about all of these things. I have the potentials all exist, and the ambivalent attachment style has to straddle one foot on a platform, one foot on a train.
Mm.
Never release the potential of anything.
Because it all tumbles down.
Well, you lose, and you're not set up to lose.
Mm.
You don't have the process for loss.
Yeah. Hurts too much.
Ergo, baked in trauma. Ergo.
Well, I feel that we've started part three, so we might as well include what we can. There you go. I think the beauty here is sometimes we just start with the out. We mean to start the third part, but that was potentially too interesting to drop.
There you go.
I think it's not that I'm afraid of failure, actually. I think if I recognise deeply that failure is very important, it doesn't mean that when I fail, I don't want to make sure that I then succeed.
Yeah.
And then perhaps I do wonder sometimes where does it all come from? I think you're getting to go back to the
An
childhood.
Existential fear of loss, Alex.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think my childhood, my parents grew up, both parents grew up very little. My dad had a very, very difficult childhood. He had effectively, I don't know how else to put it, he wasn't physically abandoned, but he was that abandonment.
Emotionally.
I can't talk, I shouldn't talk about his experience, but he went through a lot and I think the way that he was a father and trying to create nuclear stability was as a result of his childhood. Then my mum was a very anxious mother, and I think that whole thing was all about what's been passed through both people. It's just like, we must avoid loss or catastrophe, or we must, you know, the mortgage, the house, the so my whole life has been like, how can I protect against that as much as possible, and therefore that my natural thing is can I do as much or the best I possibly can. That meant, you know, being the best at school, meant being the best at medical school, it meant trying to be the best junior doctor, to protect so I can look after. And actually I do when I look at my life, I make my life more difficult, because actually I end up just, I think it's fair, my family would say that, is that I carry the family.
Yeah.
And I protect the family. I literally provide, you know, the cottages that my parents live in, a house with some cottages around it, and that whole thing is to keep them going and their life. And
you've just described, you know, when you described your dad, you described a rock. When you described your mum, you described a hustler.
Yeah.
And then you hear intergenerationally how that's come down to you, and you do the emotional labour for that household, for that family, for that network. But potentially what you've had to do then is juggle, and that piece about, actually, I need to be the best, I need to be better, I need to improve. That, when you look at the kind of the script work from, say, Claude Steiner or Eric Byrne in transactional analysis, it's all about almost script. Again, it's a generalization, it's anecdotal, but I see almost scripts overlay with ADHD all the time, because it's that I can never make it, because how will I know I'm safe? But when you talked about it, I think it's really interesting that the reason you're doing those things is to eliminate risk. How can I eliminate the risk of my parents?
But I then take more risk on.
Yeah, because I need to keep eliminating.
And it's interesting because my family do see the rock of me most of the time.
Yeah, I bet.
To provide, and actually that's why I do it. But behind the scenes is the hustler.
Yeah.
So they see the rock a lot, but the hustler is the one that's actually making this all a network that's possible. You know, my parents went through something awful losing their son. I've tried to create a microclimate for them that is as safe, that they don't have to work, that they can, you know, that they can thing. But I have to then pat, you know, the duck in the water,
that's
to
exactly
make sure that can
just
continue to exist in that climate. And
but
that my brother can have his bubble as much as possible, and also not have to...
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to expose them to the realities of that, which is the hustle. Mm. So you show them the rock.
Mm. Anyway, enough about me.
Never. Come on, I told you this is how it goes whenever I have conversations.
This is why you don't walk with a therapist.
Walk with a therapist.
You end up doing therapy without even meaning to. So, I mean, yeah. For people, I guess, listening then, we started and thought about looking around, which is usually very helpful when you're trying to deal with any blind spot. Like when you're driving the car, you're looking into the place where there's a blind spot. You're noticing other people, maybe what they're doing. You're trying that. What else can you do? What other kind of advice can you share for people that perhaps are just fed up with the current pattern repeating of behaviours? Maybe they've had relationships. Like, I think a big one, perhaps, is a good way to look at it, is through the lens of relationships. I think I wonder if that's actually a way work and relationships. I suspect two places that are very common this shows up.
Yeah.
Relationships, because relationships have the potential to cause a lot of pain.
Yep.
They have the potential for joy, but also a lot of pain. And if you're perhaps having repeated behaviours, maybe with a bridge, and you're finding that you're constantly having to, you ended up with people that you didn't really want to be with, that can end up quite painful.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, I think you're right. I mean, romantic relationships is a big area for blind spots, because we go into it seeking to heal some harm that, if we're unconscious about that harm, we're typically not going to get the healing. We're going to get something that actually reenacts it. So many people I see trying to kind of resolve some family feelings in their romantic relationships, and it doesn't work, does it? But if I was going to go super practical, because I do think there's something really valuable about going super practical, can I give you a technique for each of the four profiles?
Please. Okay. That'd be really helpful. Thank you.
Okay, good. I'm glad you said yes. So, the rock. Let's take the rock. This is what I would say, whether it's in a romantic relationship or at work. Think about discovery rather than decision. So by that I mean, a rock typically wants to decide their life and stick to it. So they get into a job. Whether they're happy in that job or not, that's the job they chose. It's the salary that they've attached to. It says something about themselves. There's a status. There's an efficiency because they've trained for it, so there's no waste. This is the way a rock lives their life. They make decisions. They get married. They set their vows. But I encourage rocks all the time to take a discovery approach, not a decision approach. So that means take a step in any direction out of the situation you're in and discover what it feels like to be there. Feel your feelings. Look around you. Notice how it feels that you've spoken up at work or you've voiced a concern with your partner. When you're in that position, then stop, look around again and work out what your next step is. So rather than trying to decide based on this really narrow database of information you've already got about life and yourself, see what happens if you make a different decision. Go to a restaurant. If you always go to a restaurant and you always order the burger, order something else. if you don't like it.
I always do the same thing. So that rock polite behaviour.
Yeah.
I also find it genuinely, people often think that I really have spent this whole podcast talking about myself. I really apologise to everyone, but I don't know. I just keep relating to things. I can't help it. I apologise. I always find it hard to get out and socialise because I find it safer to be at home.
Yeah.
There's no risk if I'm with Rolo.
Yep.
In the flat, or I'm riding my motorbike, or I'm walking Rolo, or running. There's no risk. But if I go to, say, a run club, or if I go out and socialise, I'm allowing the possibility of meeting people, and meeting people is risky.
It is risky. So take the risk to go and give yourself permission to come home.
Mm.
This is the difference, where a rock will say, well, I'm here now, I have to stick it out and see it through. Yeah. I've signed up for
when
it.
When I'm there, I usually have fun.
Yeah.
Ironically.
But you also have to give yourself permission to not have fun, to allow yourself to have fun. Otherwise, when rocks get forced, it's like seeing a rock physically, right? If we compress it, we apply all that pressure to it, it starts to crumble. Mm. We want to leave it space to discover how things feel. Act on feelings, not decisions.
Mm. I love that one.
That's our rock. So the gladiator, if you listen to the previous episode, you'll have heard this already, but I talk about discipline. If you're a gladiator, get clear on what you want now and what you want most. And in the way I described it before, what you want now might be a quick result, something that's going to be gratifying instantly. What you want most might be something that looks messier but is more collaborative. So just take the time to get clear on what you want most and aim for that. Let's take the hustler. The hustler, it's all about rupture and repair for a hustler. So it's like a lucky penny. I describe this as the client who came into me and said, I'm cured from that phobia of flying I had. I have found that if I carry a lucky penny, I can fly. That's right. Great, I said. So you get on the flight with your lucky penny, you get off the other end, you've survived, so you feel that that's successful. I get that. Now give me that lucky penny.
And they don't do it without the lucky penny.
Well, they do, because they have to give it to me.
Yeah, they have to do it.
And that's the idea. It's like, until you give that part of your brain, that amygdala part, some evidence that actually you got on the plane, you got off the plane, you survived, lucky penny, you won't get that opportunity for your brain to offer that thought to you next time.
So it could be another thing of like, I'll go to, like, if you were, it could be like, I'll go to the run club, but it'll be fine because I've got my friend.
Exactly.
But they take away the friend, and suddenly you're going to have to take the risk and prove that you could actually go and have an absolutely fine time without it.
Totally.
And it's, without them.
That's a great example. And also something even more internal than that would be, okay, so this friend likes me because I don't challenge them. Or my partner values me supporting their career. Or my mum is closer to me when I help her. Okay, what happens then if I put down those conditioned beliefs, which are basically all lucky pennies, and I show up instead as my authentic self? And I say to my friend, I know I said I'd come to yours, but can you come to me? The risk is rupture. The potential is repair. And whatever you repair, like a muscle, will grow back stronger.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that you could apply, I know it's very popular, the Mel Robbins thing, I've let them as well to a lot of that. It's like, if they don't, then it wasn't meant to be, or they didn't truly, they weren't. When you're showing up as who you really are, then let them decide whether they want to be there or not.
Yes.
If they don't, then let them go, kind of thing.
Precisely. Like Mel Robbins said, but like Dr. Seuss said, the people who mind don't matter, and the people who matter won't mind.
I love that.
Okay.
That is really good.
How about the bridge then? So
this
is that bridge exercise, and this is what I say to a bridge. Start asking yourself this one question. Is it me that's not okay, or is it this that's not okay? So a bridge, all roads lead to that bridge being at fault when something goes wrong. They're the fly in the ointment, they're the black sheep, they're the weak link, they're the one who, when they get negative feedback at work, thinks, oh God, I messed that up. I have to do better next time. What I say to those bridges is it you that's not okay? Or is it something about this that's not okay? Was the deadline unrealistic?
Mm.
Was there an unreasonable expectation? Could that have been communicated differently to you? Was there something you needed in order to meet that expectation in the way that person asked? Was there something about this that was not okay? Because if we can start to challenge the idea that all roads lead to you being the problem, we can start to share out responsibility again, take a bit more of a 50-50 approach.
That's really interesting, because it's like, rather than, right, something's gone wrong and you're instantly looking at your everything like it's all my fault or it's internally my fault, it's looking outside and going, okay, some of this could be, I could have a part to play, as we often do, but there's other
things.
It actually really reminds me of my mum, because she often, I think she's a mixture of hustler and...
She's a bristle.
Yeah, bristle. I think she's a bristle, yeah. Because I think she will immediately go, like, OK, something's gone wrong, it's all my fault, rather than being like, OK, this is like a pizza, and it might be a slice or so that's mine, but there's also at least eight other slices that go to other people.
Yeah.
And I often talk to her about this. I'm like, I use this analogy. I'm like, you always want to take the whole pizza.
Yeah.
You can never eat a whole pizza on your own, can you? So why are you trying to take the responsibility for everything? And... I suspect a lot of people feel that
way. Totally. But this is the point that actually, you know, and it comes back to kind of how did mum grow up? Because when we're little, it's much safer to believe that we are the problem than to notice that there might be some fault with the world. That's too scary. It's much better to actually find fault in ourselves, where we still have some capacity to take responsibility and change it.
And perhaps even that there's not even anyone's fault with some things. It's just life, isn't it?
Perhaps it's just life.
Just things that just happen. And
perhaps it's just life, exactly, and there wasn't anybody there to coach us through the fact that that's just life. And what do you need as a result of that part of life, that rubbish part where it's death or loss?
Do you think people struggle to accept that part the most, that when there's things that don't feel like you can actually attribute blame anywhere? You know, there's like the ad TV adverts where there's a blame, there's a claim, whatever, there's always someone wrong. Like, some things are just shit. Like my friend Freya Barlow, bless her, who got leukemia at the age of 20 or 21 or whatever she was, so young, and you know, she passed away from that illness. And like, who do you blame for that? Like, what can you can't. It's something just. It's just life has happened. It's an awful thing that's happened.
Well,
how
I mean,
do you? You know, it's like who do you blame? I mean, for her, it must have been very difficult to kind of understand that and, God, to try and come to terms with that.
Yeah.
But some things just happen in life that are hard to explain, but are just bad things that have happened.
I think if you said all that and you took the word just out, so it was some things happen, and that is life, but it's not that they just happen. We don't have to minimise them, therefore, and say, we've got to live with it, got to get over it. They just happen. What we all needed is a really wise and secure pair of hands to help us understand how we feel when those things happen, so that the feelings are still useful to us. You know, feelings aren't there to topple us or hurt us. They're there to signal what we need next. And when you talk about blame, we think about that grief cycle and the work of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. What we hear is the blame coming in at that anger-resistant part. It's going to be really tough for a hustler as well, because they only feel safe when they're active. They're not going to feel safe when they drop lower on that grief cycle and hit depression. But we need them to get there, to come up through the meaning making.
You have to feel to heal.
You do have to feel to heal. It's true. And you don't have to feel good. You don't have to enjoy it. That's what I say to people all the time. You'd have to be a masochist to want to feel how you feel when you've been bereaved in that way. And yet, you have lost because you loved. You miss because they mattered. There is meaning to be made, and we get to set a new North Star to sail by. And we have to go through that process together.
That sometimes is the most difficult thing, because 100%. There isn't always an answer to things, is there?
No.
You know, there isn't always a place that you can't think through everything. It's one of the most difficult things as a human being, is that we do a lot of thinking, or sometimes we don't do a lot of thinking, but we do a lot of thinking as human beings, and we think that everything can be thought out, and solutions and problems can be, or perceived problems can be thought to an extent where they make sense again. And sometimes having to accept what is the most difficult and most important thing.
Absolutely, and we resist it by being human thinkings and human doings rather than human beings.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's talk as we come to the end of part three for a few minutes. Well, if you don't want to not do it justice, but let's kind of move on to talk about, I guess, relationships in terms of behaviours and toxicity. And I guess this can feed out or back to the four types we were talking about. But what, as a therapist, do you see as like quite common traits that can be toxic, or things that perhaps you can think that are not a big deal in a relationship? Perhaps repetitive behaviours, perhaps it's criticism, like sarcastic jokes that are actually, you know, make people, that are actually your inner person being like, I'm jealous or I feel you a certain way, and brings the other person down. Yeah. Like, what things do you see that perhaps people could work on to avoid? Because I think sometimes we think of, when we think about toxic behaviours, we think of like, oh, bad people, excuse me, or like, this person's a bad person, but actually really good people can have quite toxic traits.
Completely. I suppose this is the nature of the blind spot, isn't it? Is that if I was to think about, broadly speaking, three kind of relationship blind spots that I see that are toxic, one is obviously around an abusive situation. So we see that, and I give examples in the book where we see a gaslighting gladiator in a relationship with a very passive bridge, and I talk about exactly how that developed and what we had to do to help that individual recognize what was going on. To be honest, even though it's not necessarily the most overtly toxic, it's probably the most prevalent, is that passive aggressive contempt that builds up in relationships where one person has all the power and doesn't want it, and the other person has none of the power and really needs to take some.
That's really interesting. And I guess that probably, you probably do see that quite a bit, I'd imagine that is quite a common one.
It's really
perhaps
common.
Because arguably the two people might attract each other.
Yes, for good reasons, because the one who's more passive has been attracted to someone who's going to be able to model to them being more assertive. Mm-hmm. And the one who's more strong and stable has been attracted to the kind of compassion and gentleness of their partner. And I say so often to couples, we're here to actually kind of learn and integrate what the other person has to offer, not pull back into our bunkers and fight for whose way is better.
So obviously they have abusive relationships, which obviously there's a very separate, perhaps, to what you're saying and talking about here, but so what we're saying is that if you've got a parent and child's relationship, then it's actually trying to help the parent become a little bit like parent-like, and the child being a bit more adult-like.
That's right. Well, I mean, we're talking about codependent relationships. That's what happens, is that both people end up reinforcing old scripts of behaviour. So the more responsible one probably had to be more responsible growing up. They don't want to be anymore.
Yeah.
But they need to learn from the other partner rather than step in and fill the gap, and vice versa.
Do you think that then people rebel against that, or they rebel against the other?
Definitely. And this is the bit where you start to see, particularly with a hustler and a bridge, actually, the less empowered positions, they tend to have this kind of, again, unconscious, but sometimes they just forget to do something, or they're just late, or they meet someone else. These things just happen, and they're not necessarily taking full accountability for the fact that they had unmet needs. But what I find fascinating is the relationships that last the longest, the most enduring relationships, are between two rocks. Really? And that doesn't mean they're the most successful.
Oh, okay, fine.
And that's what I find fascinating.
Because they both sit in it and they're like, we made our vows.
And they numb out. They tune out from their feelings. There's no need to change anything. And they have a kind of sunken loss fallacy.
So which are the ones that have the higher risk? I'm just making an assumption here that the opposite would be higher risk of ending, but maybe perhaps more success in terms of being authentic.
The most common pairing I see is between a rock or a gladiator and a hustler or a bridge. So they tend to, you see them most often. It's just that there will be more symbiosis in those relationships and typically more conflict.
Right.
So they're the ones who tend to come to therapy more often. The rocks I rarely see. And typically the rocks only come if they're a pair when one of or both of them have had a life event that means that suddenly rocking it is not going to work anymore.
So is there a combination that you think is actually most successful then? Like, I guess we don't want to be one of any of the four too much. We want to be a mixture. So perhaps your answer is going to be a mix. Someone who's a mixture of...
Yeah.
Is that the answer?
If I'm honest, it doesn't matter where you start from. Mm. You have been attracted to that person for a really good reason, even if you don't know what that reason is. It's what you do next that makes the relationship successful. Mm. If you continue to be open to learning the other person's language as a second language, then you grow to become greater than the sum of your parts. Mm. If you're looking for one to be better or worse than the other, then you get stuck in your bunkers and you pull apart. It becomes like a tug of war. Mm. I say to people all the time, drop the rope.
Yeah.
Just drop the rope. Come out of the bunker. Come to the middle ground. Stand in no man's land and have a conversation about how you really feel.
Yeah, wow. Be vulnerable.
Be vulnerable.
For the rocks, that was
Take the risk, right?
Tough for us rocks.
It's all right for you, hustling away.
Hustling and rocking. Rocking and hustling away.
Rustling, as
discussed.
That sounds
real fun. And what about number three, then, in terms of your three, the three top ones you've seen, those behaviours?
Well, the third one that I think about is this one that I just mentioned called sunken loss. I see it come up between rocks a lot. That's the one where you've been in it so long, you've invested so much, why break it?
Mm.
We've built a marriage, we've built a family, we've built plans, we've got a house. Maybe we can get away with it. Maybe we can get to the finish line in one piece, as if that's the goal of an intimate relationship. And I have to say to people, the end of a wrong relationship is not the wrong result.
Mm.
But the toxic behaviours that come out of sunken loss can be really damaging for everyone involved, kids included.
Mm. Because people become regretful.
Resentful
or something of the actual relationship itself. But they're like, I'm not going to leave, but I'm not going to nurture it, I'm not going to address it.
No, I'm not going to invest. Actually, I'm not going to invest. I'm just going to keep on doing what I've always done and getting what I've always got.
Gosh, yeah. Because there is like a narrative around relationships that it is about getting to the 75-year-old, sat there, both in your rocking chairs, and all this kind of stuff. And it is an odd one, isn't it? Rather than looking at relationships as like collections, say moments, or you might have a relationship with someone and that comes to its end. And
yeah.
I don't know. Do you believe that monogamy really exists then? Or like, or at least in terms of like monogamy in the sense of like one partner, one life?
I completely believe in one partner, one life. Mm. But I would say that within my 17 years relationship now, we've probably had five or six relationships with each other.
It evolves and changes at
completely.
Well, you need different things now to when you were both...
Yeah.
Both, well, you didn't have children and you had less...
Completely.
Different responsibilities, not necessarily less responsibilities.
Yeah.
I guess, and your needs change, and as you get older, that changes.
That's right. And I want, in the same way as my definition of friendship is, someone who wants the best for me.
Hmm.
My definition of relationship is someone who wants me to become.
Hmm.
So they don't want me to stay who I was. I don't want to hear someone say, that's not who I married. Hmm. I want someone to say, who are you en route to becoming? Great, how can I help?
Wow, that's powerful. Mm. And do you do that? Do you think that is, in your own experience, is that something that has to be, I guess it must be, reciprocated? You do need someone that is both people has that mindset, otherwise one grows, one doesn't, or both don't grow, maybe.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking to my poor, long-suffering husband who's been married to a therapist for 15 years, you
so
know?
So he really has had to change. He's real had no
had
choice.
To.
He's real had to get on board with that change process. He didn't sign up for this,
he
and he's just like, real.
He really didn't.
Were you, because when you met, you were still working in business stuff.
We were both working on Race for Life for Cancer Research UK.
Fine, so he literally didn't
no
sign
idea.
Up to it. You were like, I'm doing therapy, and that was it. Now he's,
I know,
he's
right?
Does
and
he have a joke about that?
Oh, totally, because that's when he was in his bridge phase, but with the level of agency, he's now more of a hustler. I see.
So he has morphed with it.
Completely, yeah. As have I. Like, he has taught me so much about how to how to relax and play and and kind of just take things as they come.
If you're going to give one tip to someone who's in a relationship now, just about that, maybe it's what you've already said, but just about that kind of how to actually have a successful relationship in the sense of genuinely enjoying it and getting something positive out of it, what would it be? What would that one tip be?
Show your workings out. I think so often people try to get to a point in their own thinking that they can communicate something as a conclusion. And I always say to people, no, show your workings out. Fumble and fall and fail and trip your way through the communication and say, I feel really uncomfortable saying this, and to be honest, it feels like a bit of an unfinished thought, but can I just share how I'm feeling right now? Because I don't know, there's something wrong here that I don't... Do that. Make it collaborative.
So you're kind of both working. It's kind of, I guess, rather than displaying like the negative side of jealousy or like the actions of being jealous or being, it's like, oh, I feel uncomfortable because of this, like, can you help me work this out or
get
whatever?
Get curious about it. Jealousy is such a great example. I'm so glad you reminded me, because jealousy is that brilliant feeling we get to tell us that there is a relationship in our lives that requires our attention, that we need to guard a relationship that matters to us. It's just that typically it's not the relationship we have with someone else, it's the relationship we have with ourselves. And we've stopped giving ourselves enough attention in order to feel secure. So now we're projecting that out on everyone else in our comparisons. Such a great example of where you get to go, help me out here, I'm feeling really jealous. And I know it's not about you doing something with your friends, so...
Help me work this one out.
Help me work this one out. What am I missing?
Yeah, because often, like, with jealousy, people think, well, I don't want to show them jealous. I never... It makes me laugh when people... And maybe this is unfair. Maybe some people really don't ever get jealous. Good for you. But I think most people will feel that feeling at some point, and certainly have in their lives, I'm sure. But then people really pretend that they don't ever feel jealousy. Well, it's like a natural human emotion. It's the feeling that something is at risk.
Yes,
it is. That risk is that person or your relationship or your feeling of safety, your feeling discomfort because you feel at risk.
Well, the feeling of jealousy for me is angry, sad. That's how I understand jealousy. It's pre-sad and I'm going to fight against it, so it's angry, sad. Yeah. But I don't want to feel the sad, so can I push it away by getting jealous instead? Say
so,
you're sad.
So vocalise it with people.
Vocalise
and talk about
it.
But in a way, in the right way. Not like, you're going out with this. It's like, I feel this way. It's
I
odd.
Statements.
Don't know why.
Exactly.
I'm feeling a bit like this. Can you talk me through it? Can you help me through this?
And that's exactly where this title, What Am I Missing, came from. Because it's about, can we actually get out of our taking it personally and come and stand by the other person and say, can we look at this together as a joint problem?
So rather than like nose to nose, shoulder to shoulder, side by side.
Exactly.
Because often, like otherwise, relationships and battles, you feel like it's a battleground. It's like, hang on, what are we doing here?
Yeah, who's right,
we're not
who's
a
wrong?
War here.
Yeah, totally.
There's no winner and loser. We both lose if one wins, I guess.
Yeah, and often it's one person who is articulating the insecurity of the relationship. So, like I described, you doing the emotional labour in your household. The jealous partner is often the one that's picking up on something that's a problem for both of you.
Interesting. Well, it's been a fantastic conversation. It's been
really
enlightening.
It's been fun.
Right, our health fact of the week. A study of over 300,000 people showed that people with no friends or poor quality friendships are more likely to have significant health issues, big health problems, being lonely. This is because when we're friends, we are more likely to be in a low stress state, which leads to reduced blood pressure, better health, and so on. A study which backs this up asked participants to complete a tough task. During the task, their heart rates were monitored, and the people who had a friend by their side when they did it had a calmer heart rate than those who were working alone. And I mean, I've said the fact before, but you know, being lonely is as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Loneliness literally kills. But no, it's not just about like shortening lifespans and so on. I think your life is so much less rich when you're lonely. It's just a worse life, isn't it? But so many people are lonely. And I definitely have felt quite lonely, but probably more so over recent years than in my younger years. And it's something I actively have to work against, and you know, to use that kind of move towards, move away. I have to like fight loneliness by getting up and going and doing something with friends, or making a plan with someone I don't really know, rather than being the rock in the flat. You know, that's something, that's a challenge I've had. Like, I'm aware of that. Have you ever felt lonely? Have you ever experienced loneliness?
Definitely felt lonely, and very often in big groups of people or groups that I've attached myself to. And I'm not showing up as myself. That's, I would say, I feel much more lonely around other people than I ever do by myself. There's that big difference, isn't there, between being alone and being lonely.
Sure. And it's important to be really comfortable being alone. But loneliness is a different thing, isn't
it? Horrible thing.
Lack of quality or quantity.
Yeah, and for me, the loneliness is like lack of recognition. That's what loneliness is. There's a comeback to Eric Byrne, transactional analysis. He talks about recognition hungers and how transactions are units of communication that let you know as a human that you exist. If I'm in a room full of people where I don't feel myself, I feel so unseen, more unseen than I would if I was sitting at home by myself. So it's the unseen feeling that I think existentially just cripples us.
So perhaps for different people, there's different reasons you feel lonely. It's almost, you know, try and work out what it is. Do you want more quality? Is there more? Is there some quality but not much quantity? You have like a great friend you see once every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, or do you have lots of people you see all the time but no one actually connects to you?
What's your definition of friendship? Because mine is not cocktails after work. Mine is, you know, going for a coffee and a walk. It might be sitting
really good
on
the friends
sofa.
Then.
Great.
We are
perfect.
Good friends.
That's it. Done.
That's why I told you I'll join the therapy.
But do you watch Married at First Sight? Because that's an essential.
Married at First Sight.
I actually
watched a couple. Do you know what my problem is?
No, forget it. Right. No, you've done it.
I can
now,
get into things.
It. Yeah.
But it does take me, like, I find it really hard to get into a series. But once I'm in, I'll watch every single one. It's like if I, like music, I find it hard to listen to a new artist. But if I get into their music, I listen to the same song over and over and over and over and over and over again. It's why I'm in the highest percentage for Taylor Swift's, like, although actually, at the moment, I have not been listening to Taylor quite as much. I'll be honest. I haven't been.
You've
it's
been
terrible. I am a Swiftie, but I really haven't been paying enough swiftness at the moment. I don't know. thank you so much for joining me. It's been fantastic.
Great. I loved it.
Make sure you go and get a copy of What Am I Missing? Learn more about the blind spots, but also how you can action things. Obviously, we've shared a lot of stuff in this conversation, but I think the beauty of reading is you can really sit down and take your time. It's like when I've read books that are really powerful before, a really important thing. It's not a rush. The goal of reading a book is not to get to the end. It's to take your time going through it. I really think that. So there's a lot of books, and the best books I've ever read has taken me like a decade to read.
I know. So right.
Honestly, like The Power of Now, I kind of read it at first quite quickly, then I went through it really slowly. When I really got it, it took me many years to actually go through the book, and that's all right. Sometimes things that are profound take time.
But not this podcast.
Not this podcast. No. It takes an hour and a half and you're done. Literally. And if not you really
profound.
Want to, you can put it on 1.5 and
oh,
you can real
good
speed
point,
through.
Good point.
You can real speed through. Right, everyone, thank you so much for joining. And thank you for joining
thank
us
you for
today.
Having me.
We'll see you all very soon. Don't forget to go and have a listen on the Behind the Stompcast, which if you're on Apple, then you can listen, you can subscribe for free on a free trial, then you pay some monies after that. If you want to stick around and if you like it. So we do our Behind the Stompcast after every episode, and we do my Dr. Alex's diaries every single Thursday. So do enjoy that. Thank you, everyone. Look after yourself. Take care. Happy stomping. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.